Sahana vavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryankaravavahai, tejasvinavaditamastu mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, so page 38, Adhikarana 5, the space and the heart. Dahara Adhikaranam, Sutra Reference 1, 3, 14 through 23. Adhikarana Prakashika. In Adhikarana 5, the Vishayavakya, Chandogya Upanishad 8.1.1, implores the reader to seek out and understand what is inside the small space, or ether, Dahara Akasha, within the lotus of the heart. Is it elemental ether, or Jiva, or Brahman? The doubt arises because the characteristics of being present in the lotus of the heart is common to all three. That it is Brahman is decided owing to the many descriptions applied to it subsequently, such as being freed from sins and the destination of all souls, and the bridge or support which prevents the worlds from being confounded. So you see is that this, the was it conundrum? The conundrum always comes up that there's the problem of you have the Lord, you have the living entity, and you have the material energy. So this is Sambandha Gyan, when you actually understand the real nature of all the three and their relationship. So since impersonalists and materialists don't accept all the definition of all three properly and their relationship, therefore they'll always have questions about these. They can't see it clearly. So we talked about the supreme destination, that which should be one should seek out. Everything we know it means the Supreme Lord. But for these others, they don't know because they don't actually know what material energy is, what the jiva is, or what the Lord is. Right. So that's the difficulty, and especially when you throw in the jiva's illusion, the material energy's illusion, and the Lord has no qualities. Then it really gets to be a mess. So they don't actually understand anything actually about any of the three. Because Brahman is full of qualities, but no mundane qualities. The material energy is real, but it is temporary. And the jiva is real, but he becomes covered or conditioned. Right? So they actually don't have any proper knowledge on this platform. So then to base a whole philosophy on this improper platform is definitely going to create a problem. As Prabhupada says, you have a mathematical equation, and if one part of it is wrong, even though all the other parts may be correct, the whole equation's wrong. So in the same way as they base it on the Vedas, the words are defined, the grammar, the Sanskrit, everything, that the use of the logic is all very, very nice. And they give nice analogies and everything from scripture, but because this foundational point of the Sambandha Gyan is wrong, everything becomes wrong. So that's why we understand, why do they keep bringing this up? Because their basic fundamental knowledge is wrong, therefore anything connected with this is always wrong. Right? Otherwise one would say, we're already in the third pada. Why are we still discussing these things? Because now he's saying about the Akash again. But, again, we've already explained about Akash in two Adhikaranas, and again we have to, again, because they take another angle to get it wrong. Does that make sense? So if one angle, they'll all be wrong. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Summary of Adhikarana 5. Vishaya. In the Chandogya Upanishad 1.1.8, it is heard the following. In a great city is a small lotus palace. In that palace is a small sky. That sky should be sought. That sky should be asked about. Right? So this is Upanishadic language. Right? We see is that like when Narad Muni is speaking to Maharaj Prachina Barhishad. That's basically using this Upanishadic method, right? Where you're giving these allegorical, some kinds of one of those, yeah. Allegorical aspects. So here is that the great city, meaning the body, because we think it's great. That's what we move in all those things, or the world in which we know. But then within that, a small lotus palace, that's the heart, because that's special, right? Because the lotus is unaffected by the material things, right? Any impurities, right? So then that small sky should be just small, meaning that not small, meaning that that's all the dimension that it is, but small meaning that within what we can appreciate, because the Lord's unlimited. But he comes in a form that we can appreciate. That's he does through Yoga Maya. Does that make sense? Because if he was Lord of the heart and he's unlimited, then we wouldn't be able to relate to that. Therefore, for the living entity, whatever size the living entity is, then according to the size of their thumb, that would be how big he would be. Of course, one may ask, what if the living entity doesn't have a thumb? You know, but the point is it's that proportion. So, yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned Prachina Barhishad, because that's one of the Bhagavatam verse references in this.
Oh, that's one of the verses, yes. Okay, yeah. Because, you see, it's that same style where you're using the... How come I can never get it right? Allegory. Yeah. This arrangement where you're comparing one thing to another. But you're not. It's not about a city and a small palace and a lotus. It's about the concept, but you're just putting it into a poetic form, so that's more nice. So we see is that it's an Upanishadic method, but you see it's very poetic, very analytical, very technical. But it's packaged within poetry. So the Vedic, you don't have all dry. Right? They go together. So when we're talking about, let's say, this Vedanta philosophy, very technical, very analytical, then it's packaged in poetry or in some little story. But at the same time, as we say, we have something that's very more emotional or sentimental, like that, then they'll always have the aspect of pointing out the temporariness or the difficulties that come up from that field. So it'll always balance the two. That's the point of the Vedic. So that's why we're always wondering, why when it talks about grihastha life, it always has to have this element to it? Why can't it just be nice and wonderful and fabulous? Because it has to have that balance. Otherwise, one would be sentimental and the other would be dry speculation. Yes?
Mark, what would be the difference between balance and rasa bhas? Because it seems close.
From what aspect are you looking at rasa bhas?
Well, like yesterday you mentioned that devotees stretch, you know, this is the desire of Krishna. They don't actually see what Krishna's trying to teach us through certain action and this and that. So it is a desire, but we don't see it as it is. We see it differently.
Okay. Oh, so you're taking rasa bhas, meaning that it's not rasa, meaning Vaikuntha rasa. It'll be mixed with swargiya and partiva.
Yeah, partiva.
You know, yeah. Okay. And, yeah. So you're not, because we're not. We're not discussing here about the five main rasas and that some mix in that. Okay. So Yes, that's what you have to watch out for, is the mix. So this is how it tries to keep it proper. You're analytical, but there's still that human element. Or we're dealing with the human element, but the human element has to be seen in connection with the higher principles. So that's how it... Does that make sense? Yeah, so like that, you're trying to keep the balance. Otherwise, we'll present it that it's all wonderful and nice and everything like that, but it's not. It has its good points. Like, just like it's saying that when one is engaging the senses in an activity that is recommended for one's position, that's actually a pious activity. But if one wants more than that, or beyond that, what's not recommended, then it becomes sinful. So the same engagement of the senses can be pious or impious. So that's why then it has to be appreciated. Because if we're talking about the piety, we'll be talking about the restriction. Engaging the senses in the household life, but according to the regulations, according to what's recommended, according to your position. So we see is that it has that balance. Does that make sense? Or if we're talking about more mechanical, engaging the senses, but then that aspect, we're engaging the senses, but the point is that it's temporary, so we shouldn't get distracted by that. You know, so just whichever one you take, the other one is always there. But, does that make sense? Otherwise, then, there's a main flavor, but it all goes together. Just like if you're eating a meal, it's all a balance of the whole meal, but there's a particular flavor. You're eating the salties or the sweets, or, you know, different aspects are there. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, we're eating like pakoras or something, or fried things, so they're dry, they're heavy, they're things like that. But you generally eat them with something wet. You know, the chutney, or with the rice and dal, or, you understand? Like that. So that's the whole thing. Or you have something wet, but just on its own, you eat it with something dry. You have khichdi, which is wet, but you eat it with like poppers. And so there's always that thing, but the prominence is that wetness, or the prominence is the dryness, or the, you know what I'm saying? So you always have that kind of balance, so that there's proper... You appreciate the uniqueness of the flavor, like we can appreciate when the Vedanta is being discussed directly. We can appreciate when Dharma is being discussed. We can appreciate when these senses being engaged are discussed. But we always have to see it in its connection. Like the Vedanta is the important thing, but it must apply to us in our position. Or the Dharma is there, but if it's not connected to the Lord and it's not, you know, according to what's recommended, then it doesn't have the value. The senses being engaged, unless it's also according to direction and according to the right mentality, then they'll create problems. So you're always giving that, you're recommending what should be done, but then also giving what you have to be careful of. So that's the yama and niyama. They always go together. It's not just one of the... So if someone just has one and not the other, then it's a problem. You know, someone who's... Sometimes you have that mentality where someone is the self-appointed generalissimo of some aspect. You know, they've decided that some aspect of chanting they're not going to allow in the temple, or someone's doing something on the Tulsi Puja and they're not aware when they're offering the water, so they're there to make sure it doesn't... But the point is it doesn't have the balance. It only has that harshness to it. Or, you understand? So that's what has to be balanced. So just like if you're teaching something or like that, then it has that balance. Right? It's not just, you know. So always if that balance is there, people appreciate. You know, like Ramachandra, he's a strict authority, or Parikit Maharaj or Yudhishthir, but at the same time as they have that compassion, or that mercy. So the two then together, then it goes very nicely. You know, or say like Lord Shiva is easily angered, but he's easily pleased. You know, so like that, then you can appreciate. But if it's just the one and not the other, then it becomes loses something. We'll say the person is too emotional, or too dry, or too analytical, or, you know, they're too practical. You know, so great, when you're doing something practical, you have them around, but let's say you just want to sit with some friends, you wouldn't invite them. You know, because you wouldn't be able to just relax and sit there. You know, they would be practical. Well, who should sit where and this and that? And what about, you know, it just wouldn't work. You know? Yes. Okay. So, Shamshaya, the doubt comes up. What is the small sky here in the lotus of the heart? Is it the element sky, the jiva, Lord Vishnu? Notice that here they get the lotus of the heart. They get the heart, the palace they get right. But they can't get the others right. You know? So they can't. Purva Paksha. Because the word akasha generally means the element sky, it must also have the same meaning here. But when you say general, it doesn't. That's the point. It generally may mean, but it doesn't necessarily. Right? But we've also given that in general is that where does the sky sit? Because the sky being the place that accommodates everything, what accommodates sky? Right? Because sky is an element or it's an energy. That means there has to be an energetic behind it. So even the support of sky, then there has to be someone. So, or because the jiva is very small and also the master of the city of the body, it may mean the jiva. Right. So then that becomes the problem where it says everything, that sky should be sought. So then the point is okay, that jiva, but then you're talking about yourself. But then others, then does it mean you? Does it mean them? Does it mean, you know, what does it mean? Siddhanta, the conclusion follows. Dahara utare biha. Someone said something? Sorry? Ice? Oh, what did he say? Oh. Siddhanta, the conclusion follows. Dahara utare biha. The small sky here is the personality of Godhead because of the description given in the remainder of the text. Right? So you can't take a description and only take the part, one part of it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sutra 1:3:14. Dahara utare biha. Dahara, the small utare biha, because of the descriptions that follow. The space is Vishnu because of subsequent statements. Right? Because at that statement, you could take it that it may mean a few things. Right? Because if you're saying the Akash, then that would mean the space, then that would mean what's in the space, that's where the life airs are. The Jiva's in the life airs, so then by balancing the life air, you understand, you could take. But because the subsequent points then don't give that direction, then it means Vishnu. Right? Govindabhashya, Vishaya. It is said in Chandogya Upanishad, in the city of Brahman, there is a small lotus dwelling. That dwelling is small. In that place, there is an inner place. Within that space, within that space is that which should be sought and which should be known. Chandogya Upanishad 8:1:1. Right, so we see here is that within there's an inner space and within that space. So then you're talking about something, because if you have space, space just accommodates. So why would you talk about a space in a space? You know, because it's all space, so it doesn't matter. Shamshaya, the doubt is this, the small space situated within the lotus of the heart, the element ether, the jiva, or the Lord. Purva Paksha, because the term is well known, it means material ether. Or it means the jiva, because it is described as the master of the city, body, right? So it's the master of the city, but the point is the super soul is the master of all the cities. We may be the master of our city, at least as far as we're concerned. But in reality, then, you know. Because if we were the master of our city, then basically speaking, all doctors and all insurance agencies would be out of a job. Right? You know, because nothing could ever go wrong. Right? Siddhanta, Dahara utare biha. The space is Vishnu because of subsequent statements. The small space is Vishnu. Why? Because of subsequent statements. That which is compared to ether, but free of all sins, and supports everything, cannot be material ether or the jiva. Right? Because free from all sins, the jiva has sins. ether doesn't do anything, so it wouldn't have sins anyway. So why would you bring it up? You know, like once I remember seeing something, it was being advertised. It was back when the concept of sodium-free or less low sodium was a selling point. I think that was back in the 90s when it first came out or something like that. So they had something that never has sodium in it, you know? And then they advertised it as, you know, sodium-free, you know, and everyone, oh, yeah, I want that one, you know? But all of them are sodium-free, so, you know, it's like that. So that's like that. So free of sins, it doesn't do anything, so how would it have sins? So that's not a point to discuss. And the jiva has, and supports everything, cannot be material ether or the jiva. So the jiva, he may be supportive of the body in one sense, but he's not supportive of what's outside the body, so it can't mean him either. The city of Brahman is the body of the worshipper, according to the text. The lotus of a heart is a limb of the body. It is called the abode of Brahman. Within that abode is the small akasha, the object of meditation. In that, one should seek the Supreme Brahman, free of all sin. Bhagavatam verse reference. There's also the point is when they start, because they don't know it's the Lord, they're not going to see the Lord. But if by proper association, then they'll be able to see the Lord. So all they'll be able to meditate on is a space. Just like in meditation, then dharana means you focus on a space. You have nothing to meditate on. You simply focus that there is a space. Then once you're able to focus on space, then you start dhyan, where you put the Lord there. So even according to meditation, you have to start with the space. Does that make sense? So it's... Yeah. It means you focus then on the Lord, one who knows that Paramatma is there. But here we're talking that, yes, using that yoga process. But the Lord is already there, so then he manifests himself because you're following the process.
Is it similar to like the chanting? You don't get connected to the Lord?
Yes, but the Lord is there. But it's that's why there's an offense, because he's there. If the Lord's not there and you're not attentive, what's the offense? Okay, Bhagavatam verse reference. Upanishadic dharana, dahara, the localized seat of prana. Residing in the heart refers to the Supreme Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-18. Okay, what do you call it? Prayers of the personified devas, right?
Comes up over
there. Yes, yes. Among the followers of the methods set forth by great sages, those with less refined vision worship the Supreme as present in the region of the abdomen, while the Aronis worship him as present in the heart. In the subtle center from which all pranic channels emanate. From here, O unlimited Lord, these worshippers raise their consciousness upward to the top of the head, where they can perceive you directly. Then, passing through the top of the head towards the supreme destination, they reach that place from which they will never again fall to this world, into the mouth of death. And so, it's not even just that he's in that space in the heart. He's also in the other places of meditation, in the other chakras. Because, in other words, if it has potency, why does it have potency? Right? It's not coming from the jiva, so that means it must be coming from the Lord. Okay, footnote 20. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the text as follows. The Gita says, I am the Vaishvanara, situated in the body of living beings. Bhagavad Gita 15:14. Thus, Udara in this verse refers to the Paramatma in the form of Vaishvanara, situated in the stomach region, who bestows Kriya Shakti. Right? So, then that's one form of worship, right? Because he's mentioned as Vaishvanara. So then some with less refined vision worship the Lord as Vaishvanara. So they worship in the region of the heart. I mean in the stomach. In the solar plexus. So there, he is that potency that digests, that gives all the energy, like that. So everything comes from the energy. It's an interesting thing just on the side there to know how important that is. It's a side detail, but you know how it always says that in Ayurveda, the whole thing comes down to the digestion. The digestion's off, all diseases come. If the digestion's correct, then it's there. So generally, we just take it as the stomach, what's happening there. But digestion is actually much more detailed in Ayurveda. Because when you digest in the stomach, you get rasa, right? If it's undigested, you get ama. So that's toxin. So when that goes into the bloodstream, it's naturally poisonous and it goes and sits there. So when the first one is off, then naturally you're going to get the most obvious form of, how you say, unhealthy situations, right? So that toxin will go into the system, it'll move around any part of the body that's weak, it'll settle there, that'll create the disease, right? But now let's say it's digest properly, it turns into rasa. So then that rasa then goes in, and when it goes in, the first thing it nourishes is the muscle, right? You know, it's given the example, is like when you water fields. Have you seen the locals water fields? They have a field they run the water into. They have a channel and they open a little gate that runs in there. When it's full, that runs off to the next field and then to the next field. But unless the first one is done, it won't go to the next one. Right? So then it goes in and does muscle. Right? So muscle takes rasa. Now if it's properly digested in muscle, the muscle is able to digest it in that fire of digestion, then it moves on to the fat. Right, and then when it's digested there, then it moves on to the, fat. Then it moves on to the bone, then onto the marrow, then onto the semen. So if the digestion is good, it moves through all of them. Right, but if it's not, it stops in one place. Then it doesn't move on from there. Does that make sense? So when we say about Vaishvanara that he's the fire of digestion, it's actually much broader. Because he's digesting at all these levels. So it starts on the main digestion. If that's correct, then it can go on to the next ones. Does that make sense? So it's a very significant point that Krishna's Vaishvanara, and therefore he's the digestion of all living entities. So all energy comes out of that. All the pranas and everything. Does that make sense? Yeah. So some worship him in there, but then okay, that makes the body work and all that. So we say less refined. Now, of course, it's very subtle compared to modern kind of mentalities. But the Lord Himself, how He's sitting there as the companion of the living entity, it's not as refined as that, right? That's more of a personal. Here, it's just, that's why it says it's the Kriya. The Kriya Shakti then is able to manifest by that. So the activities are going there. Does that make sense? But now that's there and you have the proper mentality, so the Jnana Shakti is correct. So that Jnana Shakti, Kriya Shakti are correct. The point is then it should be engaged in each Shakti in the Lord's service. Right? But if not, for these in the lower level, it's not going to get to the Lord. It's just, this makes everything work, and from work comes results. So therefore I'm working with that which gives results. But what the results are for, that they don't fully understand. Okay. Those of the Sampradaya of sages, having gross vision with dust in their eyes, worship this form in the abdomen. So we call this a gross on the platform of yoga, because we're talking Hiranyagarbha as gross. That's the gross form of the Lord. So it makes everything work and all that. You can say that's the Kriya. Does that make sense? Yeah. This is because the abdomen is grosser than the heart. It's a lower chakra. The irony is worship the Lord of the Jiva situated in the heart, who bestows Jnana Shakti, stimulating the intelligence. That form is hard to understand, being subtle, Dharam, that place is spread with nadis. This is the particular distinction of the heart region. The result of this particular quality of having nadis is described. From the heart, O Ananta, the effulgent place of realization, Dhamma, of the Paramatma, has ascended to the head. Right? So all the nadis are all the junctions through which, I mean, all the paths through which all the life airs and everything can move. Right? There's, I think, 72,000 nadis in the body. Right? We hear about the seven main ones, the chakras, but there's 72,000. So there's a lot of stuff going on. So then the heart region is where all these nadis are connected. So it's actually a higher principle. In other words, starting from the Muladhara, then the heart, the Dhamma appeared at the Brahmarandra. The Dhamma, or place of the Supersoul, appeared in all three places. Having obtained the topmost Dhamma on the head, they do not fall again into the material realm. Right? Because the other ones are dealing with what's within this world, and then that's what's beyond. Right? This means that those with gross vision worship Brahman in the abdomen, and the Arunis worship Brahman in the heart. Sardarta Darshani 10, 87, 18. So from the heart, that will go to the head. Yes?
I have a few doubts to that. Like all the Shad Chakra we say, the consciousness moves from lower to upper.
Yes.
So,
but some because they have a particular purpose, they focus on a particular place. So it's not necessarily they use. If they're using Astanga, then they're trying to get through all of them. But then those who aren't using that, they'll just...
Basically here from the nadi, start from the heart.
It means that's where they're connected. It connects all those. Otherwise, how do you get from the Muladhara up to the, you know, what is it, Shira? Or Shishira? Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you get there unless that's... Does that make sense? Okay, so basically point is that some worship there, but the point is that going up to that place, so it establishes that it's the Lord that we're talking about. None of these scriptures will be talking about meditating on just space without something in it, right? And, nor are they going to be meditating on the jiva, right? There is no yoga system for meditating on the jiva. Right? So why would the impersonalist then try to say that it's about the jiva, especially that it's not their system? Does that make sense? Yes.
The doubt might be is that if given the highest worship, as it mentioned in Brahma Samhita, the Shama's finger form is in the heart.
Yes.
But then, not knowing all of the stages, then we can't really appreciate the highest stage, because we think that everybody does what we do, but then we take it cheaply.
Yes. No, that's there. That's why then by studying and all that and reading and studying, then one comes across these things. Because you see is that it's always Bhagavatam is describing these things. So all these technical points of Vedanta Sutra and the Upanishads are all being discussed in Bhagavatam and in Bhagavad Gita, just we don't catch it. So that's why the reading in all these technical ways, that's the point of study. So then we start to see these connections. Otherwise, read, we went through and all that, but we should contemplate and then start to make these connections. That's the idea. So that's also then why we do this. We have this parallel study. So we have the Bhagavatam study, but we also have those books that are analyzing Bhagavatam. Right? And so then we start to see what's there, and then we appreciate, like you said, then we can appreciate beyond. Because the point is we know the technical points, but we're not interested in those. We're interested in that topmost platform that's given. So that balance, as we were saying before, that then makes it work. Otherwise, it's just about this, and so either it's that, and everything else is useless. And so we don't even technical points and everything that we need to use, we won't use. Or we take it for granted that, yeah, it's spiritual and that anything technical has to come from outside because we don't. Or we get into the Vedic technical and miss out on actually the point that the technical's made for. Because like here, the technical point, that's all like the Kriya. But the point is the Jnana and the Kriya is for realizing the Lord. You know, it's not for something else. So we can have all that technical knowledge and technical ability, but unless we see it connected to the Lord, it's a waste of time. You know, so we have to be able to accommodate that we use it, but only in connection to the Lord. Not that, unless we use it in connection to the Lord, it's a waste of time, so therefore we only need the Lord, we don't need all this, and so then it goes thrown out. Or we need this, so then let's focus on this and we forget the Lord. So that balance between between the two. That's always the difficult. That is the meaning of the Vishwanath point on focused. You know, that dhridhavrata, that one-pointed focus, because then we can see that line and we don't get distracted by the two sides. Because if we take it, there's a razor's edge, and then we have the right or left of that. How big is to the right and to the left? It's, you know, as far as you want to go. So that means it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality. But the fun point is when we have that, then you actually have everything. So as far as the going off to the right or the left can go, we have that in connection with the razor's edge. So it's like the whole, it's like that point of when one takes shelter of the lotus feet of the spiritual master, then the whole material creation, the whole Mahatattva, becomes reduced down to the size of a calf's hoofprint. And you can easily step beyond it. So when you have that middle, you have everything that's of value in the two sides. But without that middle, those two sides are a waste of time. Does that make sense? But of ones who are wasting their time at least following the recommendation of Shastra, that's better than those who are wasting their time and not following the recommendation of Shastra. That's more progressive, it's pious. But still, all one's piety, one will still end up here. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is it's trying to balance and then bring it to the point, it's about Krishna. So keeping Krishna in mind, then we balance this whole point of karma and jnana. How much is on the knowledge, how much is on the activity? Does that make sense? Just like, let us say, Arjuna, when he is after seeing the universal form, then there'll be more emphasis on the jnana, right? And then before that, then he had more emphasis on karma, right, in the first chapter, where it's all about, you know, his dharma and this and that, and we can't kill the elders and, you know, all these different things. But then once he gets the balance from hearing Gita, then he can fight in the battle and be absorbed in Krishna. So the all the different aspects can go on at once. So, yeah. Okay. Okay. So Sutra 1:3:15. Gati shabdhabhyam tata drishtam lingam cha. Gati, because of going. Shabdabhyam, and because of a certain word. Tata, furthermore. Drishtam, seen. Lingam, hinted. Cha, and. The space in the heart is Vishnu, because it is seen that all beings go to the Lord during deep sleep. And the word Brahmaloka indicates Vishnu. Sutra Prakashika. This sutra further points out the correspondence between the space and Brahman by citing a subsequent verse from the same Upanishad. As people unaware of what the ground actually holds walk again and again over buried golden treasure, so do the people of this world day after day go to the spiritual world of Brahman without knowing it. During the state of Sushupti, dreamless deep sleep, all creatures find their daily repose in the Supreme Brahman, who is seated in the heart, lotus. Since the Vishayavakya must be referring to that same Brahman and not the Jiva or ether. The Vishayavakya must be referring to that same Brahman and not the Jiva or ether. But so, then it's bringing out that point that's made, is being made, Manu makes the point, is that when at the point of sleep, so either as daily sleep, when the living entity sleeps, and deep sleep. That's why when you have deep sleep, you feel refreshed, because the jiva then goes to the Lord. By being in His association, you become refreshed. When you have, you know, broken sleep or dreams and like this, you don't get refreshed because you don't spend that time with the Lord. sounding sense. Or, you know, at the end of any of these, you know, at the end of the day of Brahma, then everybody goes to the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sri Govinda Bhashya. There is another reason why the small space is Vishnu. This passage is found a little later in the same chapter. Just as people ignorant of the whereabouts of a buried treasure wander on the ground above it, but do not know it is there, so all beings covered by ignorance day after day go to that world of Brahman, but do not know it. Chandogya Upanishad 8.3.2. That space in the heart is here called that, Enam, and is described as the goal of all beings, and is called Brahmaloka. For these reasons, the space is discerned to be Vishnu only, right? Because Brahmaloka doesn't refer to ether or to the jiva. Elsewhere, it is stated, Sata Somya Tada Sampanno Bhavati. O gentle one, one attains the Lord during sleep. It is seen that the living entities go to the Lord during sleep. It should be understood that the word Brahmaloka means Vishnu. And, on the other hand, all beings do not go daily to Satyaloka. Right? Does that make sense? So, they're not going up there, so they're going to where the Lord is. So where the Lord is, that's the Loka of Brahman. So he's the Supreme Brahman, so that's his place. Does that make sense? So Brahmaloka here, then, is meaning the Lord's place. Right? The Mayavadis will take it, Brahmaloka simply means Brahman, the Brahma Jyoti. Right? Or then those who are lower than the Hiranyagarbhas and others, the yogis, then Brahmaloka means where Lord Brahma lives, right? So you have these common, that one word has many definitions. So that's the point that's being made here, is by the context of the definitions, it has to mean Brahmaloka, meaning where the Lord stays. It can't mean other points. Yeah? Bhagavatam verse reference. The Dahara, the Supersoul, intimately associates with the living entities, although they don't know him, right? Just as daily they're going and associating with Brahma, with the Supreme Lord, but they don't know it, just as the living entities are walking on the earth, even though underneath is buried treasure. They don't know it's there. They just walk. Right? They are united with him in deep sleep, although they fail to understand how. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.20. The individual living entity, while inhabiting the material bodies he has created for himself by his karma, actually remains uncovered by either gross or subtle matter. This is so because, as the Vedas describe, he is part and parcel of you, the possessor of all potencies. Having determined this to be the status of the living entity, learned sages become imbued with faith and worship your lotus feet, to which all Vedic sacrifices in this world are offered, and which are the source of liberation. Yeah. So he's covered by all these, but he's actually not, because he's part and parcel of the Lord. So being non-different from the Lord in quality, then he's not actually part of this material. Therefore, then, it behooves the living entity to take up that endeavor to establish his relationship with the Lord based on that principle, not based on the principle of seeing the Lord in material objects and activities and results without actually knowing it's the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.7.13. When the senses are satisfied in the seer, Supersoul, the personality of Godhead, and merge in him, all miseries are completely vanquished, as after a sound sleep. Shushuptasya. Footnote 21. In wakefulness, jagara, consciousness flows along the subtle channel of the mind through the senses, to the sense objects, right? In dreaming, swapna, the mind is active and engaged not with the sense objects, but with the memory of them. But we can see is here is you're not really engaged. It's the mind. It's not really engaging the intelligence. That's why it doesn't necessarily go together. It's what experiences you've gained. So what is of value to the mind, and you put those all together. That's why sometimes they're a bit strange. Because if you analyze it, it's just going from experience to experience. That experience is in a environment, but it's about the movement of the experience. Does that make sense? In Sushupti, the three components of the subtle body are dormant. At this time, the mind enters into the puritat, nerve in the heart. Quote, 72,000 subtle nerves of perception, known as hita, expand from the heart and converge at a junction with a single nerve. The puritat. When the self is deeply asleep and not aware of anything, he has become detached from contact with the hita nerves and entered the purihat. That's far. Okay, so the 72,000, where they come together, all of them, that's purihat. And that's where the Lord is. So they all go there. Embraced by the omniscient supersoul, he has no knowledge of anything, external or internal. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.3.21. In deep sleep, the soul is said to perceive a kind of mild, temporary version of Brahmanan. Da, okay, we have it here. The bliss known after liberation from material bondage, right? So in other words, the bliss of Brahmananda is like a good sleep. But the whole point is when you're sleeping, you don't realize that. So the only point is that how will you appreciate it if you've merged into it? Right? You're conscious. Afterwards, you can appreciate it. So at the time, it may be pleasant, but you can see it's a neutral state. So that's the point. Neutral is pleasant. It's not happiness, and it's not distress. We take it neutral is happiness. So when a distress is neutralized, we'll say that's happiness, but that's not happiness. Neutral is just, it's pleasant. You know, blasé, you know, just nondescript. And so we know how well that goes if we're in that situation and conscious. We get bored. So that's why this staying in this state is not a state that the living entity actually is going to be comfortable in. That's why it's professed. This idea of impersonal, you know, realization will not make anybody happy. It can't.
Okay. This example of deep sleep was also mentioned in Tattvasandarbha by Jiva Goswami as one of the four reasons he gives that the jiva is eternally individual. Because the claim of the Buddhists and the monists, the impersonalists, is that in deep sleep, all the ahankara, all the senses, everything is destroyed. But upon waking, one thinks, I had a good sleep. And so the question is, who is it, I, that had a good sleep? If every time you go to sleep and these things are destroyed, then what is that recurring sense of self-identity?
How would you know you had a good sleep?
Yeah.
This is the famous argument of Madhvacharya. Yeah.
Sorry?
This is
the famous argument of Madhvacharya. Okay. Yeah, very good. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that identity still remains, because there is the spiritual identity of being an individual living entity. Even if you remove the material, the identity as an individual still remains. Right? So that remains. We don't know who we are on the spiritual platform, but we know that we are jiva, that much. Yeah, so that's the problem, is that the problem is the Buddhists, like you're saying, the Buddhists and the impersonalists, they remove that, even that concept of identity. So if that's removed, then how would you even know there's a good sleep? Because if you don't exist, how would you be there? So just like if no one's there to hear the tree fall, does it make any sound? So actually, is there any ananda if there's no one there to experience it? You know, so it's kind of But that's where you see is that's the common point, while this impersonalism that we're talking about, the Mayavadi, is actually Buddhism. It's the same point. You go back to the Brahman, remove those things, and basically you're in a deep sleep, so it's nothingness. Just one calls it darkness, one says it's light. But that's the only difference. So, yes?
Can you say that there's another difference than when we sleep? Unconscious, but then we go back to Brahman, we are conscious. Meaning, you know, making conscious something that we go back to Brahman. Then, as a jiva, we are conscious, but while in a deep sleep, we are unconscious.
Yeah, it means our conditioned state is unconscious.
Yeah.
But as we see, is that the, as it was pointed out, means in the Bhagavatam about Mother Jashoda. When she's asleep, then she's in that fifth level of consciousness, prema, which is beyond turiya. So then she's just always aware of the Lord. So in that case, you could say is the realized jiva then understands their position in Brahma and understands their position in relationship to the Lord. So those on the Brahman platform, they come to that platform, but it's only because they're individuals they can appreciate it. So they never actually give up. I'm not sure where it's from, but Achyutananda Maharaj, he mentioned that the Buddhists, because they want to, you know, that everything to disappear, so there's nothing, they don't go to the Brahman like the impersonalists, they go into the Garbhodak mud, because then there's no senses, no anything, it's all darkness, and so then they there's nothing to appreciate. I'm not sure where that's from, but he made that point, so that, you know, makes sense, because otherwise you should be going to Brahman, so you should be going to the Mahakalapura. But because they're atheists, why would they go there? Because the impersonalists, then they're theistic, but they only understand the Brahman aspect. The Mayavadis, they're also atheistic. So they don't go to Mahakalapura, they don't end up in the Garbhodak, they just go to hell. You know, they don't quite get there to the Garbhodak, you know.
Or if you're not a very qualified Buddhist, then you take birth as one of those frogs that hibernates in the mud.
Yes, yes. That would work. That would work. Like that. Yeah. Okay, so Sutra 1316. Yes.
So when the jivas go back into the body of Vishnu at the end of millennium, is their state called as Turiya or Sushupti?
It'd be Sushupti, because Turiya, they're actually conscious of the transcendental platform. Though, but then the next state, when they come out at the primary creation, they're in Vasudeva Sattva. So that would be that Turiya. So then they understand themselves, the Lord, everything like that. But because they're materialists, they're not interested in serving the Lord. So then, when you have the third state, when Brahma then does the secondary creation, then they're placed into the appropriate bodies. But there are some who remain in that state. You know, those are the ones that Gopukumar saw when he went to the Mahakalapura. Right? So they remain there, and then when he breathes in, they go in, and then they come back out to there. You understand? So all these three states of the void, the impersonal, and the material, you know, or karma, jnana, and then, anger. These are all, constantly, these are what the living entity goes through. So he goes back into the Lord where there's nothing, then he comes out, and then he's on that conscious, you know, but on the transcendental platform, and then he goes back into the material. So the living entity, in every breath of the Lord, goes through all three states. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why it's always, these are the points of reference. So these are the three states that we will deal with. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Okay. Dutescha mahimno shyasmin ubalebdhe. The space, oh no, dritehe, because of maintaining, cha, and, mahim naha, of the glory, asya, of him, asmin, in this, upalabdhehe, because of being stated. The space in the heart is Vishnu, because the great person alone is observed to be the maintainer of the universe. Sutra Prakashika. This sutra explains that one of Dahara's glories, Mahimna, characteristics is maintaining Dritehe, the universe. This is the distinguishing mark of the Supreme Person. So we see is that the definition applies on all levels for the Lord. And as it expands, because the Upanishad will always explain it, it always goes back. So they're talking about the first part. And then, by saying that, yes, this is the jiva, then they can, when it goes to the bigger one, then they can say, see, that's us. We are Brahman. Mm-hmm. But the definition doesn't apply, it only applies to Brahman, because if it applies to the jiva, why is the jiva not there now? So that's existing now, and the jiva is not on that platform, then who's maintaining that position? Does that make sense? Yeah. Shri Govinda Bhashya. After the words Daharo Smin Anarakasha, this Dahara or space is compared to Akasha. It is then described as spreading everywhere. It is called Atma and is said to be free of sin. It is then said Ata Ya Atma Sa Setur Vidritir Esham lokanam asam bhedhaya. That Atma is a dike, a boundary, for preventing destruction of the worlds. It is thus understood that this space, Dahara, has greatness, in that it maintains the universe. Thus the space refers to Vishnu. In other Upanishads also Vishnu is glorified in this way. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22 says, Esha Setur Vidharana Esham Lokanam Asambhedhaya. The Lord is like a supporting dike so that these worlds do not disintegrate. Right? Because the dike holds everything in place. Either it holds the water in place so it doesn't go where it shouldn't, or it protects the land by keeps out all the different things, the destructive forces. Bhagavatam verse reference. Dahara, the supersoul who dwells in the heart, is the support of the entire universe. Srimad Bhagavatam 9.19.29. O Lord Vasudeva, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are the creator of the entire cosmic manifestation. You live as the supersoul in everyone's heart and are smaller than the smallest. Yet you are greater than the greatest and are all-pervading. You appear completely silent, having nothing to do. But this is due to your all-pervading nature and your fullness and all opulence. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. He has nothing to do because he pervades everything. So that means whatever is there to be done is him anyway. And he is the support of all, he has all opulences, all opulence. The opulences are what are the forms, what is doing something, what are the results, what are the experiences. So just by his existence, everything is done. So therefore he has nothing to do, it's already done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
yeah. Can you take it, what about destroying the demons, but that's not really his responsibility, because even his expansion can handle that.
Yes.
He only comes in order to relish wrestle with his devotees.
Yes, yes, yes.
So it's not an obligation, in that sense.
Yes, yes. So we can see is that by that point is what we want to get to. We want to get to that position of appreciating the Lord's coming, not for maintaining the universe, not for destroying the demons, not for establishing Dharma, but for relishing rasa with the devotees and to attract those who are interested in devotional service, like the aspiring devotees. So, but to do something, in other words, to taste rasa is an experience of an obtained object, which is obtained through kriya and jnana. Right? So therefore the point is tasting rasa, but you perform activity to taste that rasa.
Mm-hmm.
But technically, the performance of those activities are carried out by his potencies.
Mm-hmm.
But because he wants to be involved in that form for the interaction with the devotees, then he personally is involved.
Mm-hmm.
So that fine distinction between him and his energies and the non-difference, if that's appreciated, then you can appreciate the rasa.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's the whole idea, is that if you can distinguish, then you can tell the difference between what's karma, what's jnana,
mm-hmm.
or what's jnana shakti, what's kriya shakti, and what's icha.
Mm-hmm.
But if spontaneously, of course, if you can appreciate that, that's of course the best.
Mm-hmm.
So because bhakti doesn't require knowledge to be appreciated. So for us who are not appreciating it, then going through the formal methods of analyzation and all that, then we can distinguish distance, then we can, by finding the difference, then we can try to compare that.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, then you can try to see, oh, here's that taste.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone just by hearing about the Lord gets that taste, mm-hmm. they don't need all the knowledge. Like that. So we're only using the knowledge to distinguish,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, this is sandesh, that's a piece of mud,
mm-hmm.
right? So you're eating both of them and you're, you know, like that. But if you can tell the difference, then you can see the taste in the one is greater than the other. So it's only to get to that point. Or the example is given of pointing out a tree to show a person what the moon is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the tree. It's about getting to the moon, but since you don't know what the moon is, you know what the tree is, then we'll start with the tree and get to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone already knows the moon, what's the point of the tree?
Mm-hmm.
Is that...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. It's interesting also to just have this word dahara. And so, because it's about the Lord, and that all these terms that in the scripture that are used to define the Lord, that may, you know, one are, you know, clear definitions of the Lord, or that may be misunderstood and thought of as jivas and material energy, then they're all being defined. So these particular terms are the terms that define the Lord. So the Bhagavatam defining the Lord on the topmost platform, but the term is the same. Therefore, we see as the connection between these verses is that word.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So all these verses, when you said Bhagavatam verse reference, because we're talking about dahara, and it has dahara in it.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
That was how Sahotamars found all these Bhagavatam verses.
Mm-hmm.
Is he just took the verses of the Vedanta Sutra, the words, then went back into the Bhagavatam, where are they? And then found that they had the same philosophy. So that's the meaning of it's a natural commentary.
Mm-hmm.
It defines all, but it defines them on the topmost platform of Bhagavan realization.
Mm-hmm.
It includes the others, but it's expressing Bhagavan, but it's expressing it many times directly and sometimes through giving reference to Paramatma and, Brahman. So like this, and these, depending upon the chapters, then you see more or less who's praying,
mm-hmm.
like that. So, okay, Sutra 137. Right, we finished, no?
I have a quick question.
Yes.
So the previous point, you were talking about the spontaneous attraction doesn't require
yes.
that kind of knowledge. And how would you analyze, like for example, the illiterate Brahmana who's reading Bhagavad Gita and he's crying
yes.
tears because he's recognizing that Krishna, who's all-powerful, is actually taking the humble position and serving his devotee as a chariot driver. So that's like recognizing Krishna's greatness. That's cognizance of his all-pervading, all-powerful aspect. Whereas, like the devotees of Raj, for example, have this spontaneous attraction based on Krishna's beauty and their qualities, not necessarily recognizing his Vishnu or his all-powerful aspect.
Yes.
Correct. So, I just wanted to clarify. So, that would be a different type of attraction.
Yes. That would be, it's the principle of spontaneous attraction, but it's spontaneous attraction within the realm of majesty.
Yeah.
So if we talk about spontaneous devotional service in principle, then those who are worshippers of Vaikuntha, the Sri's Madhvas, they'll appreciate and understand it, but they'll take it as a very advanced position.
Yeah.
So it won't be for general discussion.
Yeah.
You know, just like Pupati and stuff like that. So there is a spontaneous aspect to it, but it's within majesty, so therefore the greatness of the Lord, and that creates that. So they're spontaneously attracted by that, they spontaneously function in that.
So would the residents of Braj have that that kind of gratitude of receiving the mercy of the Lord, of being so blessed?
That's the meaning of Karuna.
Yeah.
It means that's the whole point. So the one who understands that the greatest are the gopis.
Yeah. But they don't recognize it in the same extent that...
No, but it's not in majesty, it's in sweetness.
Right. Yeah.
So it's that intimacy, that closeness, like that.
Mm-hmm.
So because they have that desire to serve, please Krishna in that way, and he kindly accepts that.
Mm-hmm.
That because it's not the form of it that's being used, or the knowledge of the technique that's there, like the 64 arts. It's not the technique of the 64 arts that's pleasing Krishna, it's the devotion.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's why it, you know, regularly you will say about Vishnu's not attracted by Lakshmi, or Krishna is independent. He doesn't require his 16,108 queens,
mm-hmm.
you know, headed by Rukmini. But you see, he's always with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's their devotion that attracts them, not that they're the most beautiful girls. So he's just attracted by their But they're taking that form of beauty in their devotion. So their devotion is expressed through the medium of that beauty and feminine graces and household activities and intimate interaction like that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So there's always a medium for it. That's why the Icha is expressed through the medium as a secondary of the Kriya and Jnanas.
Mm-hmm.
So it always is there, but you have to be, if we appreciate it's just to please Krishna, then that knowledge is not so necessary. But if we don't, then that's the method to get to it, because if we're not appreciating it, means we're spontaneously attracted,
mm-hmm.
but not to Krishna in the form of Bhagavan or Brahman or Paramatma, but as the material energy.
Mm-hmm.
So we use knowledge to separate that and create detachment so that we can become attached to Krishna.
Yeah.
Right? Now it sounds like, oh, detachment is the main thing, but detachment's not. Bhakti doesn't require detachment.
Mm-hmm.
It requires attachment to Krishna. But if you're attached to the material energy, then there's no space for attachment to Krishna. So by introducing some detachment from the material energy, that gives us space for some attachment to Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the point. So we're using detachment in devotional service, but it's not about detachment.
Mm-hmm.
This is a point that gets very much misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's being missed is that the brahmacharis, the sannyasi, they have to be detached and all that. And if there's anything working in the realm of where by an activity you could get some happiness out of it,
mm-hmm.
then that's maya.
Yeah.
Because they're not supposed to get into that. That's reserved for us, for grihasthas. That's all ours, 100%, our total thing.
Yeah.
But if you point out this thing about being detached and all that, why do you have to ruin our party? We're just trying to, you know, be happy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not understood as that if we're engaging detachment in devotional service, therefore the sannyasi engaging in his detachment and the grihastha is the same thing. It's just a matter of, do you do it with more facility or less facility? Basically, that's the only difference. But Yukta Vairagya is exactly the same. The Grihastha is using his whole house and family and facilities in connection. That is for Krishna. So it's in detachment. Just he's working with that. He's more comfortable in the environment of the senses. While the sannyasi is more comfortable in the environment of not using that. And so there, but it's still, his detachment still has to be connected to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole point is, it's the same thing. That's why then for the great acharyas, they don't see any difference between someone's a grihastha or a sannyasi. It doesn't matter. If they're absorbed in Krishna, then that's the perfection. Mm-hmm. So you see Lord Chaitanya and his associates, he has householders and he has renunciates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like his closest associates, Ramananda Rai and Srup Damodar. So Srup Damodar is a renunciate, Ramananda Rai is not.
Mm-hmm.
But you see in their detachment to the material energy and their absorption in Lord Chaitanya the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the field that they function in. So that's what we're trying to get to, is appreciating that. But we go through all these till we start to, you know, basically, you know, devotional service is not that, not that, not that. So when we neti, 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 we're left with devotional service, not neti, neti, and left with nothing. You know, that's the whole idea. So we're using it as a method. And you see is that now these fine points of devotional service we can catch. Before we would take this that, oh, these are very high gyan things, but you can see when you go into it, actually they're just the fundaments on which these higher principles of rasa are situated. That's the stock principle of Satchidananda. So it's, instead of it being above us, it's just the environment in which,
yeah,
you know, it's like we're in this house to discuss philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Krishna Katha. It's not about the house. But until you get to the house, then you don't hear the katha. So we're trying to get to the house.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's the point, is we're trying to get to this platform just there. So all the things that distract us, because all these things, these are the distractions in devotional service, is thinking that I'm the one who's maintaining everything. I'm the one who's controlling everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one on whom, you know, I should be meditating.
Yeah.
You know? You know, like that. You know, so we're trying to get rid of all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So then in connection with the Lord, then it becomes okay. So that's why you can see is, we don't see it here, because this is Nyaya Prashtan. So it's just going to be using the logic to establish the supremacy of the Lord. Right? And then the Upanishads are doing that in Shruti Prashtan. Right? And then Gita, then you see, as you add in the persons and everything, you add in Smriti. So then Bhagavatam, being that next step in that Smriti Prastham, then it gives the same thing, but it's, the emphasis is on the relationship with the Lord. So we see it takes on that sweetness. So as we go up through the stages in the study that Prabhupada gave, from the Gita, then to Bhagavatam, then to Chaitanya Charitamrita, then we'll start to see is that these fine points of devotional service have much more meaning than just, it's nice, it's attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. We'll understand why it's like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the main point is to get rid of the material so we actually appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so one doesn't have to worry. If one just appreciates and doesn't understand why, it doesn't matter.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premanam.